The American Society of Civil Engineers issues a report card every 4 years. It gives the nation a grade on the state of American highways, bridges, transportation systems, water supplies, and so on. And this year it gave the U.S. a D+. It made us wonder whether there are countries that get an A and what it would take for the U.S. to reach their level and also score an A. That's where we're going to start today. Jonathan Levine is a professor of urban planning at the University of Michigan. His specialty is transportation. So, Jonathan, which countries would you consider to be the top ones where infrastructure is concerned?
I do tend to focus on transportation infrastructure. And my criterion number one for successful transportation infrastructure is it should provide people with a high level accessibility. And when we look at countries in the world that do that, I'm sorry to say the United States really is quite far down the list. Looking at statistics about fatalities per 100,000 population, Sweden is the world leader in traffic safety while still providing transportation safety, while still providing a high level of accessibility. Reading down the list, there's not a lot of surprises. Norway, United Kingdom, Switzerland, Denmark. These are all countries that have very highly developed infrastructures, but there's a really important aspect to their transportation safety, and that is they provide a whole lot more transportation choices than we do in the United States.
So, Jonathan, let's just take transportation out of the mix and look at the infrastructure, generally speaking, of countries like Sweden, Norway, UK, and Denmark, the ones you really think are kind of right at the top. If you had to kind of like look at things in common that make them good in infrastructure, what would you say that is?
I think there's a culture that accepts the role of government in society. So in the United States, we have a bit of a tense role between government and the market or government and society. In these countries, there's much more of a taken-for-granted attitude that government is part and parcel of society, and government is able to take actions that are needed to support markets, to support private property, and in general needed to support society.
And I imagine that the way the United States is structured, with power diffused through states and at the local level, and with the federal government in Washington making some decisions, is that also what's kind of holding us back?
That's part and parcel. So sometimes I look longingly at other countries, and I'll say tongue-in-cheek here, China, because when China wants to develop, for example, high-speed rail, they just develop high-speed rail. They're not built around a system of checks and balances, of competing levels of government at state, federal, local, metropolitan levels. Now, there are a lot of advantages to our approach, but one of the disadvantages is that we're a lot less able to make decisions on infrastructure investment. It's all a part of the political process in the United States and much less subject to central directive.
Now, I was looking at the report cards the American Society of Civil Engineers has been putting out since 2013. Actually, there have been some improvements made on their checklist. The D+ actually seems like an improvement over past years. What is the United States doing well in terms of infrastructure right now?
On a global scale, I'm having a hard time. I think that we were at one time the infrastructure leader of the world, and I think we've slipped in a number of dimensions. As I mentioned, I focus on transportation, but I think we've slipped in terms of broadband internet. We've slipped in terms of a smart power grid, which is so important to transport sustainable energy from one region to another. We've slipped in a number of regions, and I think it has to do with changing political climates where there's much more of a culture of suspicion of government.
Jonathan Levine teaches urban planning at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Marco.
As we've heard, Sweden has some infrastructure to boast about. Swedes say their trains, planes, and roadways match or outperform those of any other European country. Indonesian engineer Yusak Susilo has looked closely at Sweden's infrastructure. He specializes in transportation at the Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm.
I commute with public transport, and the commute is always wonderful, actually. My commute time is about an hour from door to door, but then because public transport in Stockholm is a very clean and safe and quiet, so then I can actually work.
Wow. And the buses and trains in Stockholm, are they crowded?
The peak period is probably just about an hour, and compared with Japan, I can guarantee you that it is not as crowded. The bus that actually have a lot of demand, those buses actually have a lot of priority in signals and also have very high frequencies. In Sweden, I hardly check the journey planner because I know that if I wait maximum 10 minutes, I will get my bus.
Wow. I'm so jealous. Do you own a car?
No, actually, that's the reason why we actually choose to move to Sweden is because I just decided to give up driving.
So break it down for us. What has Sweden done right when it comes to spending money on infrastructure?
Sweden spent a lot of its GDP and its income back to the infrastructure and services. When the people actually use the service, they actually still have to pay the service, including the car. They actually have to pay congestion charge in Stockholm and Gothenburg. And this money actually being spent 100% back to the transport system. So then people don't really feel really bad about it, and they can actually enjoy the benefit, I would say.
What about maintenance? Is that also a big budget line? Because I took a trip around the United States a couple of years ago on Amtrak, and they're running cars from the 1970s. It's kind of embarrassing.
Well, one of the problems if you actually go with the free market system too far is that it will go to the company. And as we all know, the company is actually work for the sake of the company, which is very good, and that's what they're supposed to do. But then, at least in Sweden, there have been a long traditions of a government interest to actually serve the public. Public interest is still number one.
It's funny, though, because, I mean, you're saying it sounds like it's just essentially about Sweden setting priorities and saying this has got to come first. And I listen to Americans all the time complaining about the potholes on their street. And you wonder, where's the disconnect? Why aren't they getting filled?
In Swedish transport planning, it is actually very important that the travelers, they actually have choices to decide how they want to travel and how the transport should perform. And then the design of the whole city then should not only be based on a particular mode like automobile or private car.
Do you have any stories about getting around Sweden that might surprise Americans who are used to that, do I take the car, do I take public transport kind of question?
Probably the most famous thing about Sweden is it's a very child and family-friendly country, right? Mm. Especially in Stockholm, if you take a bus, if you take a stroller, so you actually have a small kid below 5, you can actually ride for free.
If you're a family and you've got kids under 5, then the whole family rides the bus for free.
Yes.
That motivates people, I'd imagine.
Exactly. And then because the train is actually super quiet, I can actually be very productive.
Jussak Susilo is a transportation specialist at the Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm. Thanks for speaking with us. Really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.